Julie would have joined her parents among the dead. It was apparent to Roby that the other side no longer required either or both of them to continue living. He settled back in his seat, but his posture was rigid, coiled. He did not think the danger was over just yet. Vance kept her gaze on the road, mostly. Every once in a while, she would glance at Roby's gun, and then her gaze would travel to his face. When their eyes occasionally met, she would quickly look away. They had traveled about 2 miles when she finally spoke.
You have a particular reason keeping your gun out with the muzzle pointed in my direction?
I have about a dozen reasons for it, but you've probably thought of them all.
I didn't rat you out, Roby. I'm not the one behind all this.
Good to know. I'll take that into consideration.
I can understand why you don't feel you can trust anyone, including the FBI.
Again, good to know. His voice was flat, dead. Roby didn't even recognize it as his.
Where do you want to go?
He looked at her, his expression inscrutable. Why don't you pick a place? We'll see how it goes.
Is this a test?
Why shouldn't it be?
Will you guys stop? This is not helping.
They both glanced in the rearview mirror to see Julie staring at them. Someone just set us up while in FBI custody, said Roby, his voice calm and even. He said again, So pick a place, Agent Vance. Take us there, and we'll see what happens.
How about WFO?
How about it?
Roby, I'm on your side.
He glanced out the window. The guys you called in from out of town?
I didn't call them in. They were called in by others at the Bureau.
What others?
I don't know specifically. I put in a request for agents from out of town.
She gave him a hard stare.
At your insistence, they were the ones who were sent.
One was killed. I doubt he came down here to die, so we can rule him out. But someone left the blinds open in the room where Julie was placed. He looked at her. Which agent sent you back there? Julie said,
The one who came to the door after the shot was fired. I recognized his voice.
The one who never came back. The one who killed his partner. The one who told us to hang tight. He glanced at Vance. Just like you told me to. Hang tight. Vance slammed the Beamer to a stop in the middle of the road. She turned and faced him.
Okay, shoot me then. If you don't trust me, I'm no use to you anyway. So put the gun against my head and pull the damn trigger.
Histrionics really won't get you anywhere on this.
So what exactly do you want me to do?
I already told you. For now, just drive.
Where?
Pick a direction and stick to it.
Shit.
She put the car in gear and sped off.
I heard explosions before I turned onto the street. You're doing?
I blew up 2 Bureau cars. Be sure to bill me for that.
You blew them up? We needed a diversion.
Chimed in Julie.
It was the only way we got out of the house alive.
Roby sat back in his seat. So I've got traitors in my own organization. Traitors in the FBI. A puzzle I'm not close to solving, and time is running out.
So what are you going to do?
Vance asked nervously. Regroup and rethink. The three of us are going to stick together. But we need new transportation.
What's wrong with my car?
Principally that people know it's your car.
Are you going to steal another car, Will?
Asked Julie.
Another?
Asked Vance in a raised voice.
He's really good at it. Makes it look easy.
And I hope you're just as good at driving.
Why?
He had his gun up, and he hit the button to bring his window down. Because we have an SUV on R6, and it's coming fast. Chapter 77 Vance looked in the rearview mirror. An SUV, black, big, and gaining on them way too fast. It looked like a bulky jet barreling down the runway just prior to liftoff. She punched the gas, and the Beamer leapt forward.
Wait a minute. Do you think they're cops or feds?
The shot shattered the Beamer's rear glass. Julie shrieked and ducked down as the bullet passed between Vance and Roby and cracked the windshield. No. I don't think they're cops or feds. Vance cut the wheel to the left and screeched the Beamer into a 90-degree turn, racing down a side street.
Well, then do something.
He turned, looked at Julie, who was hunkered down in the seat. Undo your seatbelt and get on the floorboard.
What if the car wrecks and I don't have a belt on?
I think that'll be the least of your worries. Julie undid her belt and dropped into the space between the front and rear seats. Roby took aim with his Glock and fired once through the shattered back window. His shot hit the front of the SUV. Roby had aimed to take out the radiator. His shot had hit dead center. He could hear the round ping off. "Armored," he said to Vance. He fired next into the left front tire. The rubber should have shredded. It didn't. "Run flat tires. Cute, really cute."
"If they're armored, we should be able to outrun them."
"Depends on what kind of horsepower they've got." He fired again at the windshield. It cracked part of the glass, but the SUV did not slow down. "Well, at least they're not perfect." He saw the gun appear from the passenger side window. Roby observed instantly that it wasn't just any gun. If it hit them, it would be over. He grabbed the wheel from Vance and slammed the car into a hard right turn that took it off the road, over the curb, and into someone's front yard. A split second later, the gun pointing from the SUV roared a dozen automatic times. The rounds missed the Beamer, but behind them, the car that was parked nearest the intersection exploded. The SUV couldn't make the turn and continued to speed down the road. Then came the screech of brakes and gears reversing. Roby worked the wheel and the Beamer jumped the curb and landed back on the road. He took his hands off the steering wheel and looked back.
"What the hell was that?"
"It's called a sledgehammer. Assault combat shotgun. I recognized it from the big ammo drum. It must have ignited the fuel tank on that car back there." He pointed up ahead. "Take the next left, and then a right, and then hit the gas hard. By the time they get back on our tail, we'll be gone." Vance did as he instructed, and they were soon alone on a road leading west, away from all the shooting. They could hear sirens seemingly coming from all directions. Julie sat up and buckled her seatbelt after wiping shards of automobile glass off the seat and out of her hair. Roby glanced at her. "You okay?" She nodded but didn't say anything. He looked around. "You left your backpack at the safe house?" She nodded again. Vance said,
"What changed, Roby?"
He looked at her after easing his gun back into its holster. "Come again?"
"They didn't want to kill us before. Just scare the shit out of us, or intimidate us, or who the hell knows what. But now it seems pretty clear they want us gone. So what changed?"
"Could be lots of things. Without knowing the endgame, it's hard to know what makes these folks tick, or what part any of us play in all of it."
"So we need to figure out the endgame. Easier said than done,"
replied Julie. "What changed?" This time the query came from Roby. Vance and Julie looked at him.
"That's what I just said,"
replied Vance. He didn't answer. He just stared straight ahead. He would have smiled, only he didn't, because it might lead to nothing. But finally, Roby might have something. Chapter 78. Roby directed Vance to his hideaway farmhouse. At his demand, she had turned off the GPS chip in her phone. Vance had called into her supervisor on the drive over and reported what had happened. One FBI agent was dead on the scene, the man Roby and Julie had seen. The other agent was nowhere to be found. In fact, the Bureau could not confirm that he was, in fact, the agent that had been sent to Virginia to protect Julie. Vance dropped the phone into her lap with a grimace of disgust.
"Damn it. Get the little shit right and the big shit doesn't happen."
"You have to go off grid. You okay with that?"
"Does that mean you actually trust me?"
"They were willing to kill you back there, too."
"I have no problem going off grid so long as there's a plan."
"It's evolving, but I need some information."
"What kind?"
He looked at Julie, who sat in the back seat staring at him. What changed was Julie came up with the right answer.
"What answer?"
Julie asked. "It was a timing issue, really. As soon as you said it, the red dot appeared on your chest. That's when we both might have become expendable." Vance looked at Julie.
"What did you say?"
She said,
"That my dad and Mr. Broom and Rick Wind were part of a squad, and a squad has 9 or 10 soldiers in it. So maybe they talked to someone else in the squad. And that's where all this started. I mean, if the three of them kept in touch, maybe some others did too.
Roby nodded and looked at Vance. So the safe house wasn't just unsafe, it was also bugged. They could hear everything we were saying. And the second Julie said that, the dot appeared. Vance said,
You really think that might be it? The other members of the squad?
I think we need to find out whether it is or isn't. And we need to do it fast.
You can get that info pretty quickly from DCIS.
I could. But since DCIS has been infiltrated, I don't want to tip my hand. Vance slumped back as she drove and thought about this.
And the Bureau might have been infiltrated too. Might have been?
Exclaimed Julie.
What part of tonight did you miss, Super Agent Vance?
Vance grimaced.
Okay, was infiltrated.
She looked at Roby.
So what do we do?
I know someone who might be able to help, he said. An old friend.
You're sure you can trust this person?
He's earned that trust.
Okay.
But I have to leave you to go see him.
Do you think it's a good idea to split up?
No. But it's the only way this will work.
How long will you be gone?
Asked Julie anxiously. Only as long as I have to. Roby got them settled in the house, showed Vance where things were, set the alarm and perimeter security, and then strode out to the barn. He climbed on his motorcycle, slipped on his helmet, and started the bike. The powerful pulses of the engine soothed him, gave him something else to focus on besides what he had to do later. He rode his bike east and then north. He reached the beltway and followed that long curve north. He raced over the Woodrow Wilson Bridge, the winking lights of D.C. to his left, the green sweep of Virginia running to Mount Vernon to his right. The building he arrived at nearly 30 minutes later was brick, small, and had a high fence running around it. There was a guard in uniform posted out front. Roby had called ahead. He was on the list. He had his proper creds. The guard let him pass through after doing a thorough search. A few minutes later, he was walking down the only hall the building had. Doors on the left and right led off from this main artery. They were all closed. The hour was late. There wouldn't be many people here. But there was at least one. The one he wanted. The man who had held Roby's position before Roby had. He stopped at one door, knocked. Footsteps came his way. The door swung open. A man in his mid-50s with white close-cropped hair stood before him. He and Roby were about the same height. The man was trim, his shoulders broad. He seemed to have retained much of the strength of his youth. When he shook Roby's hand, that strength was clearly evident. He ushered him in and closed the door, but not without first taking a look down the hall, ostensibly for any threats. Even here, Roby would have done the same thing. It was just a part of you at this level. The room was small, efficiently laid out. No personal mementos were evident. The man sat behind his desk, on which was a small laptop. Roby sat across from him, settled his hands over his flat stomach.
It's been a while, Will, said the man.
I've been kind of busy, Shane. Shane Connor said,
I know you have. Good work.
Maybe, maybe not. Connors cocked his head to the left.
Explain that.
Roby took 10 minutes to walk him through the recent developments. When he was done, the other man leaned back in his chair, his gaze solidly on Roby.
I can get the squad makeup right now. But once you get that, what are your plans?
To follow it up. There's a maximum of 7 of them left. Local ones will be the focus, of course.
I can see that.
Connors leaned toward his laptop, hit some keys, and then sat back.
Give it 10 minutes.
He continued to look at Roby.
It's been 12 years for you.
I know, I've been counting too. As though on cue, Roby could hear the tick of a clock coming from somewhere in the office. Connors said,
Look down the road?
I've been looking down the road since the first day.
And?
And there are certain possibilities, but nothing more than that. Connors looked disappointed by this, but he said nothing. His gaze went to the laptop. For the next 8 minutes, both men stared at it. When the email fell into the electronic mailbox, Connors hit a few keys, and a printer resting on the edge of the desk whooshed. Some papers slid out. He picked them up, but did not glance at the pages before passing them to Roby. "I need a fresh car. Untraceable," said Roby. "I can leave my bike as collateral." Connors nodded.
"It'll take 2 minutes."
"Thanks." He made a call. 2 minutes passed. The computer dinged. The man nodded.
"Done." They rose.
Roby said, "I appreciate this, Shane."
"I know."
Roby shook his hand. As he turned to leave, Connor said,
"Will."
Roby turned back. "Yeah?"
"When you look down the road next time, look farther than a place like this."
Roby glanced around the office, settled his gaze back on the man, and gave a slight nod. Then he was walking down the hall, the papers clutched in his hand. Chapter 79. Before starting up the car, a trim tan Chevy, Roby looked at the pieces of paper. There were only three names on them. Because of the 7 squad members other than Wind, Getty, and Broom, 4 had died, all of them years ago. That made Roby's job a little easier, at least potentially. There was something else that made it easier still. All lived locally, also included with their current addresses and a brief military history of each. The military kept impeccable records. He slipped the papers into his pocket, started up the car, and raced past the guard on his way out of the small government complex. As he retraced his route back to Virginia, he thought about Connors and his little cage back there. Connors had taught Roby pretty much everything he knew. The man was a legend in the field of sanctioned assassinations. When he'd officially retired, and Roby had gone full throttle, operating all over the world, he and Connors had lost contact. Yet Roby could still vividly remember the first mission the two had performed together. After the kill was done, Connors had kissed the barrel of his rifle. When Roby asked him why he had done that, Connors had replied simply,
"Because it's the only thing standing between me being here and me not being here."
There were a few men who could not be bought under any circumstances. Shane Connors was one of them. Roby made sure he wasn't followed and zigzagged the last 10 miles of his trip just to be certain. He got back to the farmhouse early in the morning. Vance was awake with gun in hand and a serious expression on her face. Julie was asleep on a couch in the back room of the first floor. Vance had seen the car pull up.
"Where'd you get it?"
she asked when he came into the house. He held up the pieces of paper.
"Same place I got these."
As they stood in the doorway, gazing at the sleeping Julie curled up like a cat on the couch, Vance said,
"She didn't want to go upstairs. I don't think she wanted to be that far away from me."
He walked into the kitchen. Vance followed. They sat, looked over the names and current addresses.
3 individuals, 2 guys, and 1 woman. How do you want to do this? Split up again?"
"Don't think so. They've been warned by Julie's comments. They probably know what we're going to do."
"So they'll anticipate we'll go after these folks and they'll be waiting?"
"Maybe something a little more efficient."
"Like what?"
"Like maybe they'll make all 3 disappear."
"You mean kill them?"
"If they kill 2, then they've done our work for us. They left the one who really matters. If they make all 3 go away, we're in the same boat as before." Vance set her gun on the table and rubbed her eyes. "You need to get some sleep."
"Look who's talking."
"I'll take the first watch. You can catch a few hours."
"It'll be 8 a.m. You won't go to sleep then."
"I actually feel pretty rested." She squeezed his arm. "What was that for?"
"Just checking to see if you're actually human, despite your ability to bleed."
"So we go after these people one by one, knowing that they'll be waiting."
"So they really have the upper hand, like you said. They could just make them disappear."
"They could, except for one thing."
What's that?
If they need one of them for some reason to do something.
Like what?
If I knew that, I wouldn't be sitting here trying to figure it out.
What do we do with Julie? We can't leave her here. And it would be really stupid to take her on something like this. It might be stupid, but I'm going anyway.
They glanced over to see Julie standing in the doorway looking at them with sleepy eyes that still managed, at their edges, to look angry and even betrayed.
Boy, you're really good at eavesdropping.
Julie retorted.
It's the only way I find out anything with you two.
It's dangerous.
What else is new?
Julie replied in an even tone. She sat at the table.
I've been shot at, nearly blown up, seen my parents killed, chased on foot, chased by car. So really, your dangerous argument falls pretty flat.
Vance glanced at Roby and a smile tugged at her lips.
At certain levels, her logic is awfully compelling.
So the logic is, since you've nearly been killed a few times, the smart thing is to put you in another situation where you probably get killed?
Don't feel you're responsible for me, Will, because you're not.
She tucked her hair behind her ears and glared at him. Vance's smile faded.
Okay, you two. The last thing we need is to turn on each other.
I am responsible for you. I've been responsible for you ever since we walked off that bus.
Your choice, not mine. I'm a victim of circumstance.
But you'd still be a victim.
I want to find out why my parents were murdered, that's all. Anything more than that, I don't care.
She looked at Vance and then at Roby.
So don't feel you have to care about what happens to me, because you don't. We're just trying to help you, Julie. I'm not your little do-gooder project, okay? Foster kid off the street you want to make all well and good? Forget it. That's not what this is about.
You're stuck with us, Julie, whether you want to be or not. And if it weren't for us, you'd be dead.
I feel like I'm already dead.
I can understand that. But feeling dead and actually being dead are two totally different things.
Why should I trust anybody?
I think we've earned your trust.
Well, think again.
She stood and left the room. Roby said to Vance, "Can you believe that crap?" Vance stared across the table at him.
She's just a kid, Roby. She's lost her parents, and she's scared.
Roby immediately calmed and looked guilty. I know.
We have to stick together to get through this.
Might be easier said than done.
Why?
Events might conspire to tear us apart.
Events?
Your loyalty should be to the FBI, Vance, not me.
Why don't you let me decide that for myself?
She put a hand over his.
And me being here shows exactly where my loyalties lie, Roby.
Roby stared at her for a moment and then got up and walked out, leaving a surprised Vance staring after him. Chapter 80. Roby went out into the barn, uncovered a box in the workbench, and took out a pack of Winston cigarettes. He popped one out, lit it up, and put the filter to his mouth. He drew in the carcinogens and then exhaled them. Lung cancer slow or bullet fast, he thought. What's the real difference? Time. Who gives a shit? He took another pull on his smoke, stretched out his neck. He took one final puff, ground the cigarette out on the workbench, and left the barn, locking the door behind him. He stared up at the small farmhouse. There were two lights on inside. One room where Julie was. One where Vance was. He was separated from them by about 50 feet. He was actually separated from them by about 50 light-years. I am a killer, he thought. I pull triggers, I end lives. I do no more than that. He turned and pulled his gun so fast, she threw up her hands to shield her face. Vance slowly lowered her arms and gazed at him. He eased down his gun and said, I thought you were in the house.
I was in the house, but I decided to come and check on you.
I'm just fine. She eyed the gun.
Fine, if a little edgy.
I prefer to call it being professional. She folded her arms across her chest, took a breath, exhaled, and watched it turn into mist in the chilly air.
We all are in this together, you know.
He holstered his weapon but said nothing. She moved closer.
You know, I understand guys who keep it all bottled up inside, the silent, stoic warrior. The FBI sure as hell has enough of them. But it does get old after a while, and a little grating, particularly at times like these.
Roby looked away. I'm not like anybody at the FBI, Vance. I kill people. I'm ordered to do it. But I carry out those orders. No remorse, no nothing.
So why didn't you kill Jane Wind and her son? Why did you take the time to get her other child to safety? And you did it while people were trying to kill you. Explain that to me.
Maybe I should have just killed him.
If I thought you believed that, I'd shoot you right now.
He turned to see Vance pointing her pistol at his chest.
So are you just a killer, Roby? Don't give a damn about anything or anyone else?
Why do you care?
I'm not sure why. It just seems that I do. Maybe I'm just stupid. I just swore an oath of loyalty to you back there, but it didn't seem to register with you. I wasn't expecting you to jump up and cheer when I put you above the FBI and my professional career, but I did expect some type of positive reaction, but instead, you just walked out.
Roby turned and started to walk back toward the house.
Do you always just walk away when the questions get tough? Is that your way of handling things when the going gets shitty? If so, it sucks. I expected better from you.
He turned back around, settled his hands in his pockets, and rocked back and forth on his heels. He took several shallow breaths and stared at a spot directly over Vance's shoulder. She walked toward him, sliding her gun back into its belt holster.
I thought I came here to be part of something. Please don't tell me I was wrong about that.
Roby glanced at the house. She's only a kid. She's in way over her head. She shouldn't be involved in this at all.
I know that, but she's also a tough kid, and smart, and determined.
Roby's mouth twisted. This isn't some scrape up on the playground, or some chemistry test you either pass or fail. One or both of us probably won't make it through to the end. So what chance does she have?
But you're just a killer, Roby. You said that's all you are. So why do you care what happens to me or her? It's just another job. If we die, we die.
But she shouldn't die. She deserves to have a life.
Pretty weird statement for a cold-blooded killer to make.
Okay, Vance, I get your point. She pointed toward the house.
Let's go work on the plan, all of us.
Roby didn't say anything, but he started to walk toward the house. Vance fell into step beside him. Whatever happens, Julie is going to survive this.
And for what it's worth, I'll do all I can to make sure you do too.
Chapter 81. Jerome Cassidy. Elizabeth Clare Van Buren. Her maiden name was Elizabeth Clare, and she had incorporated that into her married name, Van Buren. Gabriel Siegel. Those were the three names on the list. Roby stared down at them as he drank his coffee at the kitchen table of the farmhouse. It was 8:30. The sun was well up. He could hear the shower running upstairs and figured Vance had just stepped into it. Julie was already up. She was in the back room, no doubt brooding about their last encounter. 15 minutes later, Vance was seated across from him, her hair still wet, her pants and shirt wrinkled but presentable.
If we have to be off-grid much longer, I might have to get a few things.
He nodded, rose, and poured her a cup of coffee. She spun the pieces of paper around and eyed the list of names.
Who do we go after first?
Roby handed her a cup of coffee right as Julie walked in. Her eyes were puffy, and her clothes were even more wrinkled than Vance's. She obviously had not bothered to undress when she had gone back to sleep. Roby held up the cup. Want some?
I can get it.
She took down a cup and poured out her coffee. They sat at the table, not making eye contact. Roby pushed the pieces of paper at Julie and said, "Recognize any of these names?" She took her time, looking at the list.
No, my parents never mentioned any of them to me. Do you have pictures of them?
Not yet. You sure, though? None of them ring a bell?
None.
He took the list and eyed it. Gabriel Siegel is closest distance-wise. Lives in Manassas. We'll go there first, find out what we can. Vance said,
If we're doing it geographically, Van Buren will be next and Cassidy last. But they might be at work. I'm assuming these are the home addresses.
I thought about that, too. But if they're not at home and someone else is, we can flash our creds and get the work addresses.
Once we hit one of these addresses, we could pick up a tail, Ropey. And they could follow us right back here.
Well, we just have to make sure they don't do that.
How about we call the people on the list first?
Said Julie.
That way we don't have to expose ourselves. Or how about I call the Bureau in and get them picked up for questioning?
Said Vance.
They can't have bought off everyone at the FBI.
That's what we thought last time. It didn't work out too well.
Come on, you know what I mean.
I prefer we do this alone.
Okay, so we go with the Siegel guy first. I've looked at his military history. What does that tell us about him?
He was the staff sergeant, the leader of the squad. 50 years old now. Out of the service for years. Don't know what he does now. My source didn't have that info. Julie pulled out the phone Roby had given her.
Let me plug in his military history and address and see if Google can tell us anything.
She looked at Roby's sheet and then typed away on her miniature keyboard. She waited for the data to load.
Mr. Siegel has a Facebook page.
She turned the phone around so they could see it. An image of a jolly man with graying hair stared back at them.
Do we know if it's the right guy?
Julie said,
his Facebook says he was in the Army during Gulf One, and he's even listed the name of the Army squad he was in.
She showed this to Roby, who nodded. He's the right Siegel.
According to his profile, he works at SunTrust Bank as a branch manager. Lots of SunTrust branches around here,
said Vance.
Does it say which one? No. But his likes are guns, football, and chili cook-offs. He has 29 friends, which isn't a lot, but I don't know how long he's been on Facebook either. And he's a really old guy. He's only 50.
Vance pointed out. Julie shrugged.
Like I said, he's a really old guy. And I don't see anything on his page that would explain why all these people are dead.
What about Cassidy? Julie hit some keys and the page loaded.
Quite a few Jerome Cassidys.
She ran her eye down the page and hit the scroll key.
Offhand, I don't see any that list military service or the address you gave, at least on the Google summary page. I can go more in-depth on each of them. Try Van Buren. That's not such a common name,
said Vance. Julie did so. The page loaded.
A lot more than one would think. It'll take a while to go through these.
We don't have a while. We need to hit this now. He had pulled the car into the barn. He had earlier loaded the vehicle up with gear he thought they might need from the bunker underneath the barn. He showed Vance the firepower in the back seat. She touched an MP5 and gazed at a Barrett rifle that could punch a hole in an armored Hummer.
Where'd you get stuff like that? Never mind. I don't want to know.
Roby took out from the trunk 3 armored vests and put one on Julie while Vance slipped one on, velcroing it tightly to her torso and putting her jacket on over it. Julie said,
is this really necessary?
Only if you want to survive.
It's heavy. Better than taking the bullet, it'll stop,
replied Vance. Roby drove. Vance rode shotgun and Julie sat in the back seat. Roby had backed the car into the barn, so he pulled it straight out. He got out and closed and locked the barn door. When he got back in, Vance said,
might be the last time we can come here.
It'll be what it'll be. Now let's see what Mr. Siegel can tell us. He gunned the engine and drove toward the road. Chapter 82. It was a quiet, tree-lined street with modest-sized houses with attached garages. Houses that would sell for 2 or 3 times what they would fetch in most other parts of the country. The lots were small and poorly landscaped. The bushes around the cookie-cutter homes were overgrown enough to hide most of the fronts of the houses. Cars were parked along the streets, and in a few of the yards, small kids played under the watchful eyes of their mothers or nannies. Roby slowed his car and checked the addresses. Vance saw it first.
Third one on the right. There's a van in the driveway. Hopefully someone's home.
Roby eased over to the curb and killed the engine. He took off his sunglasses, picked up a pair of binoculars from the front seat, and surveyed the area. There were multiple attack points, too many for them to adequately cover. We're way out in the open here.
No surprise. I'll go knock on the door. You cover me from here.
How about the other way around?
I've got my FBI creds, Roby. They trump yours.
A federal shield is going to intimidate anyone. Vance already had the door open.
If someone starts shooting, make sure you shoot back. And shoot straight.
Roby and Julie watched as Vance walked up to the front stoop and rang the doorbell. Roby pulled his pistol from its holster, hit the button to roll down the passenger side window, and kept his gaze sweeping in long arcs, but always returning to an imaginary 3-foot box around Vance.
She's pretty brave to just walk up there,
noted Julie. She's a super special FBI agent. It comes with the territory.
Don't try to make nice with me, Roby.
So I'm Roby now? What happened to Will? She didn't answer. The front door opened, and Roby fixed his gaze on the woman standing there. Vance flashed her cred pack, and then took a few minutes explaining to the woman what she wanted. The look on the woman's face, Roby assumed she was Siegel's wife, was one of astonishment. The two women spoke for about a minute longer, and then the door closed, and Vance walked quickly back to the car. Roby saw the curtain on the front window of the house move to the side, and the woman peer out. Vance got back into the car, and Roby started it up.
Gabriel Siegel works at a SunTrust branch about 10 minutes from here. Got the address from his wife.
She looked surprised.
She was surprised. I think she thought it had to do with some problem at the bank. Maybe her husband is stealing money,
piped up Julie.
Maybe he's laundering it for terrorists, and my parents and the others found out.
Maybe, said Roby. He looked at Vance. The lady was watching you as you walked back to the car.
I'm sure she was. She's probably calling her husband as we speak, so let's get going.
I'll take the meeting with him. You stay in the car with Julie.
And when do I get to do something other than sit in the car?
She asked. Your time will come. Before this is over, everybody's time will come. They reached the bank branch in less than 10 minutes. Roby left them in the car and walked into the small brick building right off a busy road in Manassas. He asked for Gabriel Siegel and was shown back to a glass-enclosed cubicle about 10 feet square. Siegel was about 5'8", stocky and pale. To Roby, he had looked much better in his Facebook photo. Siegel rose from the chair behind his desk and said, "What's this about?" His wife obviously had called him. Roby flashed his badge and said, "You were in an army squad in Gulf One?"
"Yeah, so? Does the army want me to re-enlist? Not gonna happen. I did my stint and I'm too out of shape to carry a rifle in the desert."
He sat down in his chair while Roby remained standing. "I'm more interested in the people you served with. Keep in touch with any of them?"
"Some, yeah."
"Who exactly?"
"Exactly. What is this about?"
The banker was showing some balls, thought Roby. "It's a national security issue. But I can tell you that it might be tied to the bus explosion and the deaths of those people at the restaurant on Capitol Hill." Siegel turned paler still.
"Jesus. Somebody from my old squad was involved in that? I can't believe it."
"So you know them all well?" Roby asked pointedly.
"No, I meant that, well, we all fought for our country, and to turn against it."
His voice trailed off and he just sat there, pudgy hands on his cheap desk, looking like a little boy who'd just been told his puppy had been run over by a car. "Which of them have you kept in touch with?" Siegel came out of his trance and said slowly,
"Doug Biddle, Fred Alvarez, Bill Thompson, and Ricky Jones died years back."
"That I know, but they didn't live in the area. They were all spread out."
"Yeah, we would call each other, exchange emails. Doug came here once and I took him around to see some of the monuments. Fred got killed in a car accident. Billy put a damn gun in his mouth and pulled the trigger. Doug and Ricky both had cancer. Younger than me. I think it was all the crap we were exposed to over there. You know, Gulf War syndrome. I could be dying and not even know it. Every time I get a migraine, I think it's all over.
He sank back into his chair. Roby sat down opposite him and said, Any of your old buddies locally that you hang with?
I saw Leo Broom a few times. That was a while back.
How far back?
Over 10 years ago. Ran into him at a bar in Seattle, of all places. He was out there on business, and I had just changed jobs and was at a seminar. He seemed to be doing okay. Think he worked for the government or something like that. Don't remember exactly.
Anyone else?
In the Middle East, I was closest to Curtis Getty, but I haven't seen him since we got back stateside. Don't even know where he is now.
That would be dead, thought Roby. Leo Broom ever mentioned Getty?
Don't remember. For some reason, it didn't seem like they had kept up. But like I said, that was a decade ago.
10 years ago. That might have been the case, thought Roby. Anyone else? Rick Wynn, for instance.
I read that he had been murdered. Is that what this is about?
Had you been in contact with Wynn?
Nah, not for years. Used to see him, but he'd gotten strange. Bought that pawn shop in that crummy neighborhood. I don't know. It was just different.
How about Jerome Cassidy?
Nope. Haven't heard from him since we left the army.
He lives in the area, not that far from here.
Didn't know that.
How about Elizabeth Van Buren? That's her married name. Her maiden name was
Elizabeth Clare, I know.
It was unusual having a woman in the ranks back then, wasn't it?
Yeah. Things are different now, of course. But I always thought the combat exclusion rule for women was crap. They could fight just as good as men. And in a unit, they really let their strength shine. Guys are more macho. Women build a team perspective. And I gotta tell you, even though women were deployed in combat support positions, but technically weren't supposed to shoot back, they sure as hell did. At least in Gulf One. And Lizzie was one of the best. She was a better soldier than I was, I can tell you that.
But she's no longer in the army, said Roby.
Well, there's a good reason for that, replied Siegel.
You've been in touch with her?
I have.
So what's the reason she's no longer in the army?
Cancer. Started in her breasts and then it spread. It's in her brain, lungs, liver now. She's terminal, of course. Once that stuff metastasizes, it's over. They don't have any magic bullets for that. She's at a hospice center in Gainesville.
You've seen her?
Went regularly until about a month ago. She was in and out of it. Mostly out. Morphine. I'm not even sure if she's still alive. I should have kept up, but I guess it was just too hard to see her like that.
What's the name of the place?
Central Hospice Care. It's off of Route 29.
Okay. Siegel exclaimed,
I'm telling you, it's all the crap we breathed in over there. Depleted uranium, toxic cocktails from all the artillery blasts, fires burning all over the damn place, painting the sky black, burning crap we didn't know what the hell it was. And there we all were, just sucking it in. That could just as easily be me in that bed, waiting for the end.
Roby handed Siegel a card. Anything else occurs to you, give me a call.
What is this really all about? How can somebody from my old squad be involved in all this stuff?
That's what we're trying to find out. Roby paused. Did your wife give you a heads up we were coming?
She did, admitted Siegel.
She worried about something?
She's worried I might lose my job.
Roby thought back to Julie's theory of money laundering for terrorists. Why? Problems here?
I haven't done anything wrong, if that's what you're implying. But who comes into banks anymore to do stuff? It's all online. I'll be here for about 8 hours a day, and I'll see maybe 2 people. How much longer do you think they're going to pay me to do that? There's a reason banks have all the money. They're cheap as hell. Writing's on the wall. World has changed. And I guess I haven't changed fast enough. Maybe I will end up carrying a rifle in the desert. What else is there for a guy my age? I can be a fat mercenary. But I'll die the first day out there.
Well, thanks for your help.
Yeah, Siegel said absently.
Roby left him there, looking like he'd already received a death sentence.
Chapter 83.
They pulled into the parking lot of Central Hospice Care 20 minutes later. There were about 15 cars in the parking lot. As they drove through the lot, Roby examined each one to see if they were occupied. He pulled into a space and looked at Vance. You want to do this one, or should I? Julie said,
I want to go in.
Why?
She fought with him. Maybe she knew something about my dad. She's probably not in much condition to talk,
said Vance.
Then why are we even here?
I'll take her in with me. You keep watch.
You sure?
Asked Vance. No, but I'm doing it anyway. He and Julie walked into the hospice building, a two-story brick structure with lots of windows and a cheery atmosphere inside. It did not look like a place where people would come to see their lives end. Maybe that was the point. The flash of Roby's creds got them escorted back to Elizabeth Van Buren's room. It was as cheery as the rest of the place, with flowers grouped on tables and on the windowsill. Light streamed in from outside. A nurse was checking on Van Buren. When she moved away, Roby's hopes for any personal information from the critically ill woman sank. She looked like a skeleton and was on a ventilator. The machine inflating her lungs via a tube inserted down her throat, with another tube bleeding off that to carry away toxic carbon dioxide. There was also a feeding tube inserted into her abdomen, and multiple IV lines running to her. Bags of medication hung from an IV stand. The nurse turned to them.
Can I help you?
We just came to ask Miss Van Buren some questions, said Roby, but it doesn't look like that's possible.
She was put on the ventilator 6 days ago. She comes in and out. She's on heavy painkillers.
The nurse patted her patient's hand.
She's a real sweetheart. She was in the army. It's just awful it's come to this.
She paused.
What sort of questions did you have?
Roby pulled out his creds. I'm with the DOD. We were just making some inquiries into a military matter, and her name came up as a possible source of information.
I see. Well, I don't think she'll be of much help. She's in the last stages of her disease.
Roby studied the ventilator and the monitoring systems hooked up to the shriveled woman lying in the bed. So the ventilator is helping to keep her alive?
Yes.
He looked at Julie, who was staring at Van Buren. But she's in hospice. The nurse looked uncomfortable.
There are many levels of hospice. It's all in what the patient or their family want.
She looked down at the woman.
But it won't be long, ventilator or not.
So the ventilator is what the family wanted.
I'm really not at liberty to say. Those matters are private, and I can't see what this would have to do with any military inquiry.
She added with some annoyance. Julie had wandered over to the windowsill and had picked up a photo.
Is this her family?
The nurse looked curiously at Julie and then at Roby.
You said you were with DOD, but why is she with you?
I'm really not at liberty to say, answered Roby, causing the nurse to purse her lips. Julie brought the photo around to show Roby. She said to the nurse,
My dad was in the same army squad as Mrs. Van Buren. I was hoping to find out some things about his past from her.
The nurse's stiff expression vanished.
Oh, I see, sweetie. I didn't realize. Yes, that's her and her family. There used to be more pictures in the room, but her daughter and husband have been slowly taking them. They know the end is almost here.
Roby took the photo. It showed Van Buren in healthier days. She was in her dress greens, her chest awash in medals. A man was beside her, presumably her husband, and there was a girl about Julie's age. So that's her husband?
Yes, George Van Buren, and that's their daughter, Brooke Alexandra. She's older now, of course. That photo was from a number of years ago. She's in college now.
So you know her?
She's been in to visit her mother quite often. That's how I know her. Brooke's a lovely girl. She's very torn up about her mother.
And her husband?
He comes here regularly. I know he's devastated, too. They're barely 50, and they have to face this, but whoever said life was fair?
Anybody else come to see her?
A few people. At least that I know. I'm not assigned to this wing all the time.
You have a guest log?
It's out front by the receptionist, but not everyone signs in.
Why not?
This is not a high-security facility. People who come here to visit friends and family are usually very emotionally upset. Sometimes they forget to sign in, or one person signs in for the group. As you can imagine, we're a bit flexible on that. They come here to show love and respect and support. But it's just not the sort of place anyone wants to have to visit.
Understood. How long has she been here?
4 months.
Isn't that a long time to be in hospice?
We have people here for longer and shorter periods. It's not a one-time period-fits-all sort of place. And until a couple of weeks or so ago, Mrs. Van Buren wasn't like she is now. The drop-off came relatively quickly.
But the ventilator will keep her alive so long as it's on, right? I mean, even if she can't breathe on her own.
I really can't talk to you about this. Federal and state law prohibits me from doing so.
I'm just trying to understand the situation. The nurse once more seemed uncomfortable.
Look, normally the use of a ventilator would decertify a person for hospice care. Hospice is to allow a patient to pass with dignity. We're not a place where someone goes to be cured of her disease or to artificially sustain life.
So the use of the ventilator in a situation like this is unusual.
It could be grounds for decertification and the transfer of the patient back to a hospital or other care facility.
So why the ventilator? Does she have a chance of pulling through?
Again, even if I knew, I couldn't tell you. What I can tell you is that sometimes families reach a point where they have false hope, or where they made a decision to come to hospice and then reconsider that decision.
I see. Julie added,
"It's hard watching someone you love die."
The nurse said,
"Yes, it is. Very hard. Now, unless you have any other questions, I have some things to do for my patient."
You said her husband visits regularly.
Yes, but at odd hours. Brooke goes to college out of state, so she doesn't get in as often.
Do you have any idea where her husband works?
No, I don't.
I can probably find that out easily enough. The nurse looked at Julie, who was staring at Van Buren.
I'm sorry that she couldn't tell you anything about your father. Yeah, me too.
Julie reached over and touched Van Buren's hand.
I'm sorry.
Then she turned and left. Roby handed his card to the nurse. If her husband comes in, can you have him give me a call? Roby glanced once more at the terminally ill former soldier, turned, and followed Julie out. Chapter 84. Roby held the door open for Julie and then climbed into the car after her. He buckled up and looked at Vance. Don't see anything with Elizabeth Van Buren being helpful. She can't talk, and she won't be alive much longer.
And what about Siegel? You didn't say much after you left the bank.
He said he spoke to Leo Broom, but over a decade ago. Said he didn't know Curtis Getty or Jerome Cassidy were in the area. He seems to just be waiting to see if he'll get cancer too, or lose his job. Unless he's hiding something really well, I'm not sure how he figures into this either.
So that leaves Jerome Cassidy.
He's in Arlington, right?
What the paper says.
Note anything suspicious out here?
Not a thing.
Let's go. It took over an hour to get to Arlington because traffic was bad, or in other words, traffic was normal heading toward D.C. It was nearly lunchtime when Roby found a parking space and pulled into it. He turned to Vance. You sure this is the space? She held up the page, and he read off it. All three of them turned to look at the building.
It's a bar and grill,
said Julie. Roby looked upward. But there seemed to be rooms above it. Maybe Cassidy lives in one of them. Vance undid her seatbelt.
My turn.
Roby looked across the street and then back at her. The area they were in was congested, like much of Arlington. There were too many homes and businesses with not enough land to put them on. That resulted in tight streets with not much parking, and lots of hidden spots from which they could be watched. Let's all go in on this one. Vance shook her head.
What about the car? We can't leave it unattended. I'm not looking to get back in here with a bomb under the chassis.
I got this car from a special source, which means it has special defensive devices.
Like what?
Like if someone tries to break into it or booby-trap it, it will not be a fun time for them, and we will most certainly know about it. They all climbed out of the car. Roby's gaze was shifting in every direction.
What is it? You see something?
No, but that doesn't mean they're not out there.
You didn't seem this tense at the other places.
That's because this is the last place. Vance took a quick breath and nodded.
Right. I see your point.
The name of the bar was the Texas Hold'em Saloon. At 10 minutes to noon, it already had about 20 people inside. It was decorated in a Western theme, heavy on saddles, bridles, cowboy hats, and boots, and with murals of horsemen, cattle, and the flat Texas plains. At the far end of the space was an enormous bar that spanned the entire width of the interior. Bar stools, with faux bull's horns as seat backs, lined the space in front. Behind the bar, a large Texas flag hung on the wall. All around the flag were stacked hundreds of libations, designed to wet the whistle, lighten the wallet, and dull the senses. "Somebody spent a lot of cash on this place," commented Roby. A young woman dressed all in black, except for her white cowboy hat and white boots, and holding a menu, approached them.
"Party of three?"
"Maybe. We were given this address for a friend of ours, Jerome Cassidy. You know him?"
"Mr. Cassidy's the owner."
Roby and Vance exchanged a quick glance. "Is he here?"
"Can I tell him who's asking?"
Vance held out her cred pack.
"FBI, could you take us back to where he is?"
The woman looked uncertain.
"Can you let me just check to make sure he's here?"
"So long as you check while we can see and hear you." The woman's polite features vanished. She looked at them nervously.
"Is Mr. Cassidy in some sort of trouble? He's a great boss."
"We just want to talk to him," said Roby. "So he is here?"
"Back in his office."
"Lead the way." She turned and started off hesitantly. She walked past the bar and down a short hallway and turned right. Passing through a door marked authorized personnel only, she continued on. There was another short corridor down here, with two doors on either side. She stopped at one marked office and timidly knocked. They heard noises coming from inside this room. Roby's hand ventured toward his gun. Vance saw this movement and mimicked him. A voice from inside the room called out, "Yeah?"
"Mr. Cassidy, it's Tina. I have some people here who want to talk to you."
"Do they have an appointment?"
"No."
"Then tell them to make one." Roby moved past Tina and tried to open the door. It was locked. "Hey," Cassidy called out. "What the hell's going on? I said to make an appointment." Roby pounded on the door. "Cassidy, it's the FBI. Open the door now." Roby heard more noises, scuffling, and a drawer slamming. Roby moved back and then drilled his right foot against the doorknob. The door flew inward as Tina screamed and jumped back. Roby and Vance had their guns out. Vance moved Julie to the side.
"Stay back."
Roby moved into the room first, with Vance covering him. Cassidy was standing behind his desk, staring at him. He was about Roby's height, but thinner, with broad shoulders and narrow hips. His hair was longish, gray and brown. His face was slender but good-looking, with a few days' worth of stubble. He had on faded jeans and an untucked white shirt. As Roby moved forward, Cassidy said, "You want to tell me why you just broke my door and are pointing a gun at me? You want to tell me why you didn't open it when we asked you to?" Cassidy glanced at Roby's gun. Then he stared over at Vance as she moved into the room. "Let me see your creds right now." Roby and Vance held them out. Cassidy read them carefully and picked up a pen and wrote their names and badge numbers down on the white blotter on his desk. "Just want to get the info right for my lawyers when they sue your ass."
"You didn't open the door, Mr. Cassidy,"
pointed out Vance. "I was just fixing to when you broke it open. And I didn't know if you really were the feds."
Your employee told you we were the FBI.
I pay you $10 an hour to look cute and seat people. I don't trust her to know the FBI from a postal worker or some guy looking to rob me.
He eyed Tina through the open doorway.
It's okay, Tina. Just go back to work.
She hurried off, and Cassidy looked at Roby, who had holstered his gun.
And you're not even FBI. You're DCIS.
You know DCIS?
I was in the Army, so what?
He sat down behind his desk, pulled a slender cigar from his shirt pocket, and lit up.
You can't smoke in a restaurant or bar in Virginia,
said Vance.
While it's true that the good Commonwealth of Virginia has seen fit to deprive its citizens of the right to smoke in an establishment like this, even though the health department, which enforces said law, has no real enforcement powers, and lots of places still light up to their heart's content, this is my personal space, and it has a special ventilation system, so I can smoke myself into late-stage lung cancer if I want to. Get a sit and watch?
We have some questions for you, said Roby.
And my lawyers will have no answers to your questions.